Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Wednesday, May 18th. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, Diamondback Rattler to Merge, by Mella McEwen. 3 years after Diamondback Energy launched an initial public offering for its Rattler Midstream subsidiary, the company has agreed to acquire all the publicly held units it doesn't already own. The agreement is a roughly $575 million roll-up that MarketWatch reported values Rattler at $2.2 billion. Under the all-stock transaction, expected to close in the third quarter, gives each public unit holder of Rattler 0.113 of a share of Diamondback common stock in exchange for each common unit owned, an exchange ratio that implies a premium of 17.3% for Rattler common units based on the closing price of Rattler's common units and Diamondback's common stock as of May 13th. The energy landscape has transformed dramatically since Rattler was taken public in 2019, and we believe this agreement to merge companies is in the best interests of both Diamondback and Rattler stakeholders, said Travis Stice, Chief Executive Officer of Diamondback and of the general partner of Rattler, in a statement. This merger will allow both companies to benefit from the simplicity and scale of the combined entity going forward. This article is entitled, DPS, Three Die in Crash. Two Not Wearing Seatbelts in Late Night Greenwood Collision, by the Midland Reporter Telegram. Three people are dead after a collision Monday evening in Greenwood, according to Department of Public Safety officials. DPS reported Tuesday that a 2018 Mercedes-Benz 300 was traveling north on County Road 1083, and a Dodge Ram 2500 was traveling east on Farm to Market Road 307. It was around 10 p.m. that the Mercedes disregarded a stop sign and pulled into the eastbound lanes, resulting in the Dodge striking the left side of the Mercedes, according to DPS. The accident took place around 5 miles east of Midland. Noah Salcido, 47, of El Paso, Roberto Vasquez, 40, of Deming, New Mexico, and Rafael Ariza Garza, 32, of Midland, were in the Mercedes and died at the scene. Salcido and Garza were not wearing their safety belts, according to DPS. This is the Business and Oil page. This article is entitled, Gasoline Tops $4 a Gallon in Every State, by Chunzi Zhu, Bloomberg. Gasoline pump prices have risen above $4 a gallon in all states in the U.S. for the first time ever, as the last holdouts, Kansas, Oklahoma, and Georgia, saw prices rise overnight, according to Auto Club AAA. In California, the most expensive state, prices are averaging $6.021 a gallon, a fresh record, while five other states are above $5 a gallon. Ever higher prices, less than 2 weeks before the start of peak summer driving season, are a burden to consumers and a potential challenge for President Joe Biden. Biden's decisions to release crude oil from emergency reserves have translated to little relief at the pump, in part due to a lack of refining capacity to process that crude. It's too early to know how this latest increase will impact drivers or their summer travel plans, said Ellen Edmonds, a spokesperson for AAA. Historically, people take planned trips, but find other ways to offset the higher prices at the pump, Edmonds told Bloomberg in an email. The burden of high pump prices falls most heavily on lower-income families who spend a bigger portion of their earnings on fuel, and they are less likely to drive electric cars, said Mark Findlay, a fellow at Rice University's Baker Institute for Public Policy, in an interview earlier this month. The average U.S. household will spend about $450 more on an inflation-adjusted basis for gasoline this year compared with last year, according to a government forecast this month. But higher wages mean gasoline expenditures as a percentage of disposable income remain only slightly above the average since 2015, the report said. A handful of financial and physical metrics, including low fuel stockpiles, suggest pump prices are likely to rise further this summer. Average U.S. diesel prices are now $5.573 a gallon, also a record, AAA records show. This article is entitled Junior League Honors Midlander. Andreasen's impact after returning home with preeminent local women's leadership organization results in Sumner Award. By Iris Foster. Susie Pruka Andreasen is a perfect example of a Midlander who went away to seek fame and fortune and then returned to find fame and fortune here. An outstanding Lee High School soccer player, she attended Southwestern University, where she participated on the soccer and swim teams. She graduated cum laude with a political science major and moved to the Northeast to attend the University of Maryland School of Law, because she wanted to be close to the action in Washington, D.C. Her summer activities led to a job as legal policy intern on the Bush-Cheney 2004 campaign and a law clerk position on one of Senator John Cornyn's subcommittees. After clerking in the Maryland Court of Appeals, Susie served as an honors attorney, assistant attorney general in the Criminal Appeals Division for 8 years. She also taught part-time in the Political Science Department of the University of Maryland's Baltimore campus for 3 years. She returned to Texas in 2016 and became a Brazos County Assistant District Attorney in the Appellate Division. Shortly thereafter, she moved to Assistant U.S. Attorney in the Appellate Division for the Southern District of Texas. In 2017, she moved back to Midland, and worked first as an assistant district attorney in Ector County and then in Midland County. Earlier this year, she joined the firm Ekman Bidwell PLLC. She also teaches part-time at UTPB. Although Susie accumulated accolades in high school, college, law school, and in her career, her volunteer leadership in Midland qualified her for the Betty Whitmire Sumner Award, presented by the Junior League of Midland at its annual meeting on May 10th. Betty was a third-generation Midlander who died in 2012. A Rice University graduate, she taught school in Kermit and Midland and worked at the Western Company before becoming a stay-at-home mother and community volunteer. In addition as serving as president of the Junior League, Hospice of Midland, the Aphasia Center of West Texas, and chair of the Midland Memorial Hospital Board of Trustees, Betty Sumner devoted hours to the city's Planning and Zoning Commission, PTA, First United Methodist Church, United Way, and Trinity School. When nominating Susie for this award, her legal colleague and fellow junior leaguer Tanya Bidwell wrote, "Susie embodies the spirit of the Junior League and its founders." Just like Betty Sumner, she served on multiple local boards, including Centers, Reach Network, and the city's Parks and Recreation Commission. She's volunteered as a soccer coach and referee for Midland Teen Court, Midland County Bar Association, and Museum of the Southwest. She joined the Junior League of Baltimore in 2008, where she ultimately served as president. Other positions she's held in 13 years at three leagues include treasurer, membership, and public relations vice president. Her nomination listed two major highlights of her Junior League of Midland career. She spearheaded the rebranding and renewed marketing effort, which included a new website design, video, social media short clips, new logo, and created a weekly internal newsletter, which is emailed to the entire membership. In 2020-21, she revitalized training opportunities impacted by COVID-19 protocols, yielding 400 hours. Courses ranged from women in leadership to basic skills like how to install car seats and fun activities. When told of the award, Susie mentioned that Mary Beck, JLM sustainer and former executive director of Midland Teen Court, first encouraged her to join the Junior League in Baltimore to meet like-minded women. When she came home, she affiliated for the same reason. She's heard the phrase Midland Mafia applied to Junior Leaguers, but realized that it was the preeminent local women's leadership organization, and past members were responsible for starting so many of Midland's nonprofits, including Midland Teen Court. So she considers membership a badge of honor. Presented by Tanya Bidwell, this award illustrates the league's vision statement of "Hand in hand, we build a better Midland." It also reminds Midlanders who have left that you can go home again and find fame and fortune. This is the obituary column, Wednesday, May 18th. Daryl Ray Farris. Daryl Ray Farris, 74, of Palm Desert, California, passed away on May 10th at his home. Daryl was born in Fort Worth on December 5, 1947. Daryl is survived by his wife of 32 years, Mary Hansen Farris, daughter Marcy B., and son-in-law Bruce Carl of Georgetown, South Carolina, son Wesley Farris, son Bobby and daughter-in-law Betsy B. Farris, his sister Christy and husband Jeff Ritchie, as well as several grandchildren and nieces and nephews. Daryl is predeceased by his father and mother, Bobby Ray and Betty Louise Farris, and his brother, Randall Keith Farris. A celebration of life is being planned for June 4th, 9 a.m., fellowship at 10 a.m., celebration of life, St. Margaret's Episcopal Church, 47535 Highway 74, Palm Desert, California. Leilani Matthews. Leilani Matthews passed away Monday, May 16th. Leilani was born in Corpus Christi on October 18, 1955, to Harold and Daisy Matthews. Leilani was preceded in death by her parents, her loving partner of 15 years, Elaine Matthews, and her brother Richard Matthews. Leilani leaves behind family and friends that loved her very much. A gathering to remember her life will be held Friday, May 20th at 10 a.m. at Ellis Funeral Home. Pamela Morrow Sullinger McNeil. Pam McNeil, 76, passed away peacefully on May 11th. Born to Jean Smith and Wilbur Sullinger on January 6, 1946, in Kansas City, Missouri. Pam is survived by her son, Ryan McNeil of Midland, and his wife, Jennifer, and sons, Brock and Hudson. She is also survived by her brother, John Sullinger of Gallatin, Missouri, and his wife, Mary. At Pam's direction, no services will be held. In lieu of flowers, please consider a donation to the ALS Association or your favorite charity. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Wells Funeral Home. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. William Raymond Futrell. William Raymond Futrell, Bill, passed away peacefully on May 16th at the blissful age of 100. surrounded by family and loving caregivers. Bill was born on April 8, 1922, to James William Futrell and Mary Sophronia Futrell in Glen Cove, Texas. Bill is survived by his wife, Linda Futrell of Midland, his sister Dorothy of Phoenix, Arizona, his son Billy and wife Kathy of Midland, as well as several grandchildren. Bill was preceded in death by his first wife, Ruby Lois Allen, his parents and brother and sister. Funeral arrangements are under the direction of Ellis Funeral Home, with visitation on Thursday, May 19th from 6 to 7:30 p.m. Funeral services will be at Fairmont Park Church of Christ on Friday, May 20th at 10 a.m. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations can be made to Hospice of Midland or your favorite charity. Death notices. David Perez. David Perez, 53, of Midland, passed away May 13th. Visitation will be on Wednesday, May 18th at Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home from 9 a.m. until 8 p.m. Service will be held at 11 a.m. on Thursday, May 19th at Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home. Online condolences can be received at www.asanchezTFH.com. Diane Nobles. Diane Nobles, 68, of Midland, passed away May 14th. Cremation services have been arranged by the family. Online condolences can be received at www.asanchezTFH.com. Martin Holguin Caballero. Martin Holguin Caballero of Midland died May 16th. Full funeral followed by burial will be held on May 19th at 10 a.m. at American Heritage Funeral Home. Arrangements are entrusted to American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home and Crematory in Midland. This is the opinion page. This column is called Opinion Extra. It is entitled, Inflation Puts Pressure on Local Officials to Be Better, by Stuart Doreen, staff columnist. Did you see the Bloomberg story in the weekend edition of the Reporter-Telegram? Midland is home to the highest inflation in America. Yes, sometimes it hurts to live in God's country. This story talks about the real issues that come with being in Midland right now. Times are certainly good in the oil field, and there is nothing wrong with that. The Reporter-Telegram supports the oil industry, always has, always will. Still, the Bloomberg story laid out a case that many Midlanders need help. Midland, Texas, has had the longest bout of high inflation in the U.S. over the past year. Yes, that includes Dallas and even New York City. Bloomberg reports 9% to 11% inflation going back to November. The national average during that time is around 6 to 8%. Here's an excerpt from that story. Menus at local restaurants have sticky notes telling diners that prices have been raised. A gallon of milk has surged to about $6 at local gas stations, often the closest option for basics. And each Wednesday, a growing line of hundreds of cars forms outside the area's largest food bank. Inflation in Midland has hovered near 10% for the past 6 months, more than any of the about 400 metropolitan areas tracked by Moody's Analytics, and well above the national average. Over the period, the West Texas oil industry hub has had it even worse than big city hotspots such as Atlanta and Phoenix. Why do I write this? Because awareness matters. Rents are increasing. The price of homes is turning Midland into the Highland Park of larger West Texas cities. We have heard over and over about the Midland markup when it comes to building projects. And we don't have enough people to keep construction projects going or keep restaurants fully staffed. And most people and businesses don't benefit from being government, where a cost of living adjustment is a vote of a government board away. This isn't the first time I have written this, but there probably hasn't been a more important time to be on one of the government boards: city council, commissioner's court, school board, hospital board, or college board. At this very time, you have a duty to keep services to what Midlanders expect and do so responsibly. We need more people to live in Midland. Our quality of life or quality of place is impacted dramatically by the fact our schools, hospitals, construction firms, restaurants, and stores don't have a dependable workforce. We also need businesses that don't measure up to the energy industry in terms of the bottom line to feel there is a place for them in our community, and that they aren't feeling the impact of inflation worse than those in Manhattan, San Francisco, or Austin. Because right now they are. The Midland markup is hitting each one hard. This is an unbelievable time in Midland, with government entities lining up tax elections, public-private parks projects in the $55 million range, and social media conversations asking to bring more to Midland for our quality of place. After all, it's what Midlanders want. It takes me back to last year's City Council budget passage. Mayor Patrick Peyton voted against it. When asked why he voted against it, he said he didn't feel like it was a good time to vote for a tax increase. That, of course, brings up the bigger question. When is the right time to raise taxes in Midland? I can't imagine now is the best time. Again, for those on government boards across the city, you ask the residents of Midland and Midland County to be an elected official. You wanted this responsibility. We have many core responsibilities that need to be addressed. Please make sure you are up to the task of deciding what's needed and what really isn't a function of government, especially in a community where inflation is beating down on the average person. This article is entitled "Pioneer Donates Playhouses in Midland Area" by the Midland Reporter-Telegram. One of Texas's largest oil and natural gas producers is celebrating its 25th anniversary by distributing dozens of employee-built children's playhouses to numerous destinations throughout the Midland area, where the company's operations are based. Pioneer Natural Resources is donating 25 of the playhouses to dozens of nonprofits, schools, libraries, and museums. Some destinations include the West Texas Food Bank, Midland Public Library, the Bynum School, and the Museum of the Southwest, among others. The company, headquartered in Dallas, is donating 10 additional playhouses to the North Texas-based Irving Family Advocacy Center, a nonprofit that provides free counseling and education services for victims of crime, domestic violence, and families with high-risk juveniles. I can't think of a better way to commemorate our 25th anniversary this year than by building and donating these unique playhouses, which will be enjoyed by scores of children for years to come, said Pioneer Natural Resources Operations Executive Vice President Joey Hall. Since our founding, we've long held the belief that investing our time and resources back into area communities is not only the right thing to do, it's the pioneer thing to do. It's a pleasure to celebrate our milestone birthday in this special way, and as we head into our next quarter century, Pioneer looks forward to continuing our long-standing commitment to supporting worthwhile causes through service projects like these. For weeks, teams of Pioneer employees donated their time and talent to design, paint, and assemble the playhouses, with each featuring its own look and style. The Museum of the Southwest, for example, requested an outer space theme because its playhouse will go inside an on-site planetarium. "It's hard to put into words the feelings I have for this project," said Pioneer lead maintenance technician Brent Schuler, who was among the dozens of employees who volunteered on the project. "I am overwhelmed by the generosity the company and its employees always show." For Schuler, working on his team's playhouse, a colorful structure destined for Big Brothers Big Sisters of the Permian Basin, was one way to thank Pioneer for taking care of him after a cancer diagnosis last year. He said the company's involvement in charitable projects like this demonstrates that Pioneer is a family, not a workplace. "From the construction, to the painting, to the overall theme we were assigned, this team rocked," Schuler said. "Looking at the other teams, I can honestly say some have missed their calling as professional artists." Another employee volunteer, Kevin Jumper, said the project shows the company's commitment to Permian Basin communities. "It's been great for Pioneer to build relationships with these organizations and show in a small way that we support the work and services they provide," said Jumper, Pioneer Area Construction Superintendent. To mark both the 25th anniversary milestone and Permian Basin Gives Day, Pioneer presented two of the playhouses on Tuesday to the West Texas Food Bank, which has forged an enduring partnership with the company. "We are so excited to be the recipient of not one, but two of these special playhouses from Pioneer," said Libby Campbell, CEO of the West Texas Food Bank. "So much of our programming revolves around children and their care. Any additions to our children's play area will make the kiddos feel special and will help them know that our community will always rally to provide for the children. We are so grateful to our friends at Pioneer for their continued support of our children's programming through their sponsorship of our school pantry program and beyond." Since its founding in 1997, Pioneer has established itself as a state and regional leader in oil and gas exploration, industry innovation, and production. Throughout its growth in Texas as a large independent energy company, among its enduring missions has been a deep devotion to community philanthropy and volunteerism. One playhouse recipient is the Sibley Nature Center, a 49-acre preserve in Midland's Hogan Park that celebrates the region's natural history by offering a broad range of educational programs to visitors. The center's playhouse will be placed in an educational garden and serve as an extension of its gardening program. The playhouse project will allow families with young children to experience everything a garden has to offer, such as insect identification, butterfly and bird migrations, as well as plant and flower life cycles, said Paul Acosta, the center's executive director. Distributing most of the project's 35 playhouses in the Midland area again demonstrates Pioneer's corporate giving focus as a 100% Permian Basin company. The company closed out 2021 by donating 35 acres of land in November to Midland Habitat for Humanity, valued at around $2 million, and followed less than a month later with a pledge of $2.5 million toward a partnership aimed at redeveloping 120 acres of Hogan Park. This is the Dear Abby column. Delicious dessert tastes best shared with company. Dear Abby, I lost your cookbooklet collection. My family and I have really enjoyed some of these recipes. I have loved all the ones I have tried, but my favorites are the desserts. Particularly noteworthy is your peanut butter pie. It is yummy. Please let me know how I can order the booklets again. I need them because I'm having a family celebration for Father's Day. Signed, Sweet Tooth in Phoenix. Dear Sweet Tooth, you and I have something in common, our affinity for desserts. I have made the peanut butter pie for guests many times, and it has been well received. The last time I prepared it, I thought I'd try to decalorie it. I drained some non-fat yogurt and cheesecloth until it thickened and substituted it for the cream cheese. It worked beautifully. My guests couldn't tell the difference. For readers who might like to try it, here's the original recipe. Heavenly Peanut Butter Pie. Crust: 2 cups graham cracker crumbs, 1/4 cup butter, 1/2 cube melted, 2 ounces semi-sweet chocolate grated. Filling: 1 cup crunchy peanut butter, 1 package 8-ounce cream cheese softened, 2 teaspoons butter softened, 1 cup sugar, 1 teaspoon vanilla, 1/2 cup miniature chocolate chips, 1/2 cup salted peanuts, optional, 1 package 8-ounce frozen whipped topping thawed. In medium bowl, combine cracker crumbs, butter, and chocolate. Mix well. Reserve 1/4 cup crumb mixture to use as garnish. Press remaining crumb mixture onto bottom and sides of a 9-inch pie plate. Chill. In large bowl, beat together peanut butter, cream cheese, and butter. Add sugar and vanilla. Blend well. Stir in chocolate chips and peanuts. Fold in whipped topping. Pour into chilled crust and garnish with reserved crumb mixture. Chill overnight. Serves 8 disciplined people. My cook booklet set contains more than 100 tasty recipes for soups, salads, appetizers, main courses, and, of course, desserts for special occasions. Order by sending your name and address, plus check or money order, for $16 U.S. funds to Dear Abby Cook Booklet Set, P.O. Box 447, Mount Morris, Illinois, 61054. Shipping and handling are included in the price. I'm proud to say that some of the recipes included have won blue ribbons in country fairs, while others were featured on the cover of women's magazines. But whether your entertaining is formal or casual, remember, it's who you put in the chairs, in addition to the food, that makes a great party. Dear Abby, my daughter's boyfriend recently stayed at our home for 8 days. He's 50, we are in our 60s. He regarded help yourself to mean it was okay to drink our liquor from early afternoon to bedtime. How can we have some control over this situation without causing a scene? Signed, Bars Closed in North Carolina. Dear Bars Closed, put a lock on the cabinet where you stow your liquor, or move it out of the house entirely when you know he's planning a return visit. And while you're at it, have a serious conversation with your daughter about her boyfriend's insatiable appetite for alcohol, because it could have a negative impact on her future. You can write to Dear Abby at dearabby.com or P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, 90069. Her column is distributed by Universal Press Syndicate. This article is entitled 6 MISD Principles to Leave District by Stuart Doreen. 6 Midland ISD principals will not return to lead schools in the 2022-23 school year, according to Midland ISD agenda documents. The district reports that 5 made their departure official this month. According to the district, Henderson principal Julie Barraza, Scarborough principal Gloria Hamill, Abel principal Cindy Piles, and Parker principal Stephanie Ramos all handed in their resignations to the board this month. The one retirement notice came from Carol Squires of Washington STEM Academy, which is closing its doors next year in favor of a permanent home for Young Women's Leadership Academy. In April, Bunch's Mary Lehrer gave the district notice of her resignation. All are scheduled to take effect at the end of the school year or in June. Four of the resignations and retirements were leading campuses that were considered failing the last time the Texas Education Agency handed campuses grades in 2019, Barraza, Hamel, Squires, and Lehrer. Other resignations or retirements included Carla Martin, Executive Director of Finance, and Stan Van Hooser, former principal at Lee High School and current Executive Director of State and Federal Programs for the district. This article is entitled TTU HSC Officials Show Off Physician Assistant Program Building Expansion by the Midland Reporter-Telegram. There was a ribbon-cutting Monday for the Texas Tech University Health Sciences Center's $30 million School of Health Professions Physician Assistant Program Expansion at Midland College. State Representative Tom Craddock, Republican Midland, secured $20 million in 2019 from the 86th Texas Legislature, and community partners provided additional support. Midland Development Corporation, $5 million, Permian Strategic Partnership, $2.5 million, and the Scarborough Foundation, $1 million, and the Henry Foundation, $100,000. The additional $1.5 million comes from other gift funding and TTU HSC institutional funds. We are grateful for the generosity of our community partners and the state legislature whose support made this expansion possible, TTU HSC President Lori Rice Spearman, Ph.D., said in a press release. The state-of-the-art facilities it brings marks a milestone for our physician assistant program and will help transform healthcare in this region. Not only does the additional space allow us to accept more of the qualified students who apply to the program, but the new facilities allow students to remain in the community for all aspects of their classroom coursework. The end result is an opportunity to retain more physician assistants in the region, enhancing access to care, and filling critical shortages in areas including primary care. The 32,500-square-foot facility will include an anatomy lab, clinical classrooms, and training facilities. The labs will be available for nursing students as well as healthcare professionals throughout the Permian Basin. The expansion will allow PA class size to increase from 60 to 72 students in the next 3 years. In 2019, officials reported that three-quarters of the 160 physician assistants in the Permian Basin were Texas Tech University Health Sciences Center alums. Physician assistants make great health care possible, State Representative Tom Craddock said during a groundbreaking event in 2019. This article is entitled OPEC Plus, Pumping More Oil Won't Ease Gas Prices. Partners likely to continue to raise output quotas by 432K barrels a month. By Anthony DiPaola and Verity Ratcliffe, Bloomberg. Saudi Arabia's energy minister said a dearth of refining capacity meant that gasoline and other oil products would remain expensive, even if the world's biggest exporters pumped more crude. Prince Abdulaziz bin Salman's reiteration that there are physical impediments that no producer can solve comes as spiking gasoline and diesel compound inflationary pressures that are worsening a global cost-of-living crisis. At the same time, the determination of OPEC Plus to stick to modest supply increases, despite flows from coalition member Russia being disrupted by an international boycott, has drawn the ire of U.S. lawmakers. There is no refining capacity commensurate with the current demand and the expectation of the demand in the summer, the minister said at an energy conference in Bahrain on Monday. Prince Abdulaziz's comments were echoed by Bahrain's oil minister, Sheikh Mohammed bin Khalifa bin Ahmed, who said the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries and its partners are likely to continue to raise output quotas by 432,000 barrels a month. There's no new capacity coming, he said at the same event. Even if you produce more crude, there isn't demand for it. There aren't any more refineries. Fuel prices have surged as efforts to isolate Russia, one of Europe's most important suppliers, upend international markets. Soaring demand ahead of the peak U.S. driving season is sending refining margins to extraordinary heights, benefiting refineries, including Saudi Aramco. OPEC Plus is achieving market balance in its best performance in maybe more than 50 years, Iraqi oil minister Ihsan Abdul Jabbar said in Bahrain. This article is entitled Early College Student on Way to Cornell University by Rebecca Bell. Editor's note, funding provided through Permian Basin Gives Day helps pay Midland College tuition costs for Caleb Goylando and other students attending Early College High School at Midland College. On July 17th, Caleb Goylando will be 18 years old. However, before then, he will graduate from Midland College with an associate degree on May 13th, then receive his high school diploma from Early College High School at Midland College, ECHS at MC, on May 20th. In mid-August, he will travel to Cornell University in Ithaca, New York, where he will major in biological sciences on a pre-med track. People often ask me why I chose Cornell, Goylando said. The main reason is that it's an Ivy League school with a great reputation, but also I have relatives living in that area. I applied to Cornell and several schools in Texas. I was also accepted into the University of Texas, Austin, but I've always wanted to go to Cornell. When I received the acceptance letter a few months ago, I wasn't sure we could make it work financially. Thankfully, I will receive several scholarships. Cornell will provide me with networking connections and research opportunities surrounded by other scholars who take an interest in developing themselves. Goylando is one of the top five students in the graduating class of ECHS at MC. He has been attending the Accelerated High School located on the Midland College main campus since the beginning of his 10th grade year. I applied to ECHS at MC when I was in the 8th grade at Goddard Junior High, he explained. That year I was denied acceptance, but I was determined to get into the program. I loved the idea of being academically challenged. After hearing about ECHS at MC and how I could get both a high school diploma and a college degree at the same time, I knew that was the program for me. So, the next year, while I was a 9th grader at Midland Freshman School, I applied again as a transfer student. Thankfully, I was accepted as a sophomore. Goylando said that he has not regretted his decision for a minute. I love the fast-paced environment, he exclaimed. It's also given me an opportunity to make friends outside of just my age group. Through my college courses, I participated in learning teams and discussion groups with traditional age college students as well as adults. After I got over my intimidation of being the youngest in the group, I found that we all work well together. Because of where we are in life, we have different outlooks, but that just makes our discussions more interesting. ECHS at MC is a four-year high school partnership between the Midland Independent School District and Midland College. Because of an accelerated curriculum, students have the opportunity to graduate high school with an associate degree and enter college ready for a bachelor's degree program. There is no cost for students to attend ECHS at MC. Midland College offers a full scholarship to all students so that they do not have to pay college tuition. Scholarship funding is provided through community donations, and each year Midland College directs all funds received through Permian Basin Gives Day to the ECHS at MC Scholarship. ECH at MC is ranked among the best high schools in Texas and is considered number one in the Midland metropolitan area, according to U.S. News and World Report. According to the rankings, ECHS at MC sits at number 195 among the state's thousands of high schools. Early College High School at Midland College also ranked among the top 40% of schools nationwide. One might think that with those rankings, ECHS at MC accepts only students in an elite privileged category. However, that is not the case at all. Minority enrollment at ECHS is 87%, and 49% are economically disadvantaged. It hasn't always been easy, but I am so thankful for the opportunities I've had in the program, especially being able to take college courses from college professors, Goylando said. The ECHS at MC curriculum has pushed me to do my best, to do something different than just getting a high school diploma. I've learned how to use resources, improve time management skills, and refine my personal values. Goylando has also proven to be a student leader, not just at the high school level, but also at the collegiate level. This past year, he was an officer in MC's Phi Theta Kappa PTK Honor Society and was instrumental in coordinating a student-produced podcast at Midland College. I remember my first PTK meetings, he recalled. I sat in and ate the free food. Then, in one meeting, Dr. Terry Gilmore, MC Government Professor and PTK Advisory, talked about creating a podcast for Midland College. Being a podcast enthusiast, I immediately talked to her about it. A few weeks later, I became the Vice President of Leadership and oversaw the Midland College podcast. The podcast was a way to showcase all students at MC, ECHS and honor students, as well as non-traditional students, those who were older and coming back to get skills training or upgrade current skills. Through PTK, I also met my best friend Anna, who attends a community college in the Dallas area. PTK gave me connections that I wouldn't have had otherwise. Goylando is an only child. His father, Sebastian Goylando, was in the U.S. Army, and Caleb was born on a military base in Italy. When he was 2 years old, his father was transferred to Fort Hood in Killeen. His parents later divorced, and Caleb moved to Midland with his mother, April Franco. He attended Midland Independent School District elementary schools, Anson Jones Elementary, Bush Elementary, and Washington STEM Academy. When I was a freshman in high school, I picked up a book in the Midland Freshman School Library entitled The Hot Zone, by Richard Preston, Goylando said. It's a true story about an Ebola virus outbreak. The book sparked my interest in infectious diseases, even before the COVID pandemic. Right now, my goal is to pursue my interest in infectious diseases, probably through medical school, when I graduate from Cornell. In addition to a medical degree, I'm also interested in pursuing a PhD. In his spare time, Goylando enjoys playing tennis and playing the violin. On Friday evening, Goylando was the selected student speaker at Midland College's graduation ceremony. During his speech, Caleb addressed his fellow Midland College graduates and said, "While the world doubted you, you kept on running. While you went through the challenges of Midland College, you kept on dreaming. You looked at your future, you looked at your life and said, I see the future I want, and I am going to get there." At the close of the interview for this article, Caleb Goylando remarked, "I have had an amazing experience at ECHS at MC. Thank you for the opportunity to study at Midland College and be the highest achieving student I can be." Rebecca Bell is the Executive Director of Institutional Advancement at Midland College. This is the opinion page. This column is called Commentary. Beware those who aren't educated about the tax rate. By Stuart Doreen, staff columnist. Beware those who don't know the difference between the tax rate and tax collections. The other day I received a mailer. It referenced a governmental entity that supposedly cut taxes in half over a 20-year period. I read it thinking, cool, way to go. But a second look at the information provided made me realize this was another example of someone getting tax rate and tax collection mixed up. Budget season is coming up again, and people are going to hear about tax rates and tax collections. You're going to hear a few politicians talk about lowering the tax rate, or low tax rates in general, and thinking they have been good fiscal stewards on that alone. Some do this because they know there are people in the community who do not know the difference. Here is Budget 101 in a nutshell. An entity determines generally how much it wants to spend on a given year. The entity then gets the valuations estimate from the appraisal district and puts that number in the formula to determine a tax rate. If the tax rate is too high, the budget is cut. If it is low, there is the option to spend more. Every once in a while, you will hear someone say that valuations are the reason that taxes increased or decreased. The problem with that is they have the valuations before determining the tax rate. In Midland, I think this is a fair assessment, our valuations have skyrocketed over the last 20 years or so. A $100,000 house in 2003 could be put on the market today for more than $250,000. We have artificially high housing costs in Midland. That is part of life here. And one reason I don't care for politicians who focus on the tax rate is the message they are sending the electorate. The tax rate is not the only thing that matters. And someday, whether in 5 or 20 years, a bubble will burst, and the median valuation of a home in Midland will trend lower. That will send tax rates in the other direction, and there is very little that any politician can do about it. Here's another thing to remember. The example used at the beginning, that this taxing entity had cut taxes, confuses residents about tax rate and the collection. The collection, not the rate, is what we pay. And in the case of our local entities, there are not any entities with a 50% lower tax collection per capita. Again, beware the person who talks about only the tax rate. He or she is not telling the entire story. They are, possibly intentionally, distracting you from their actions in creating an oversized budget or putting up the facade of fiscal conservatism when they were just in office at a time of unprecedented valuations increases. If you want the budget, fine. Say so and move on. If you don't, and believe the size of a budget puts a hardship on the taxpayer, vote against it and recommend cuts. But in most cases, the budget requires a certain tax rate. And no entity's tax collection is 50% of what it was 5, 10, or 20 years ago. It's frankly not possible. And beware those who tell you otherwise.
This is Connie reading the Odessa American for May 18th, 2022. Council Moves Forward on Redistricting by Kim Smith. The Odessa City Council voted unanimously during its workshop meeting Tuesday afternoon to redraw the council's district boundaries using Plan A, despite complaints many Black and Hispanic people didn't get a chance to participate in the process. According to a demographer hired by the city, the latest census figures show that each of the city's five districts' boundaries need to be redrawn in order to comply with a law that says they must be within 10% of each other population-wise. Districts 2 and 4 are overpopulated by 22 and 24% respectively, while the others are underpopulated by 14 to 16%. Under Plan A, the overall deviation number drops to 6.33%. District 1's Hispanic population will fall from 66% to just under 61%, and the Black population will fall from 11% to 9.34%. District 5's Hispanic population will drop from roughly 77% to just over 75%, and the Black population will rise from just under 4% to 4.7%. In AACP, President Gene Collins told the council he had always been invited to participate in the process in years past, and he and other members of the Black community were not asked to participate this year. He asked for the opportunity to meet with the demographer so they can study the data and do what's best for our community. We'd rather do it now as part of the process that you're going through, rather than having to file a lawsuit with the Justice Department and bring them into our situation, Collins said. Ector County Commissioner Armando Rodriguez also asked for more time for people to chime in. In part, he said he'd like to see more Hispanic council members since Odessa's population is now 56% Hispanic. Mayor Javier Hoven repeatedly asked Rodriguez if and how the county commissioners involved minorities in their process, and District 2 council member Steve Thompson queried Rodriguez as to whether he went to Odessa College and the Ector County Independent School District board meetings to question their processes. Rodriguez avoided answering Hoven's question and told Thompson no, he'd just found out about Tuesday's council meeting. When asked what his specific issues were with the plan, Rodriguez said he hadn't seen the maps. He noted a lot of people probably haven't seen them, likely due to work obligations. Council member at large Denise Swanner, who represented the council during the process, pointed out the process began in September and five public notices were out about the meetings. If you felt like I've excluded you, I apologize, Swanner said. I did what the demographer said and went to the meetings. He posted public hearings, and if each of you would like a personal call, I guess you need to get my cell number, and I'd be happy to let you know. Swanner said she also wanted to refute allegations that she had a bigger role to play in the drawing of the boundaries than she did. District 5 council member Mary Willis bemoaned the fact that no matter how the council voted, they wouldn't be able to please everyone. But she hoped whatever they did, it will be free of possibilities of negative measures that could and have shown throughout history to be unlawful or unrepresentative or not fair. I hope we are not doing that. Throughout the process, the city's attorneys, staff, and Swanner worked hard to devise options, Willis said. In a prepared statement, Willis urged people to participate from here going forward. Don't be afraid by what we say or anybody else says. Don't be afraid to show up in our meetings. Speak up because that's why you have a voice. Speak to your representative and let that voice be known and bring positive, workable solutions to the table. And by all means, show up to vote because your vote is your voice and your voice is your vote, Willis said. Without naming names, Willis also chided her colleagues on the council for belittling citizens and making them uncomfortable instead of hearing them. Let's be respectful and let's be hopeful that we as a body, as a council body, will do the right thing for the right reason, because I've heard accusations too that the lines are being drawn to draw someone in and so that they can run against a certain person, Willis said. I hope that's not true. I hope that's not true. You said what you heard. I'm saying what I've heard. I've heard that. Let's just hope that we serve on a council that will be fair. Thompson told Hoven that he wanted to apologize, but it kind of irks him that Collins and Rodriguez were picking on the council when he heard no one attended the school district's meetings to discuss their boundaries. I think we've done everything properly. I applaud Denise for her hard work. I know that's not fun work, Thompson said. District 4 Council Member Tom Sprawls noted that while they kept hearing people are disenfranchised, they're not heard anyone say there's anything wrong with the two plans they are considering. Sprawls also echoed what District 1 Council Member Mark Mata said. For the most part, when you have a Hispanic population of 56%, it's virtually impossible to gerrymander that to give anybody any more strength. And when you have a black population of 6% or just a little over 6%, it's virtually impossible to gerrymander it so those people get additional strength, Sprawls said. Look at these people standing up here. There's three Anglo here. So how unrepresented are you? How disenfranchised are you? And when have you ever been timid about calling Mrs. White if she's your councilwoman simply because she's white? It probably hasn't happened, so I'm ready to go ahead and vote. In other matters, Public Works Director Thomas Kerr updated the council on efforts to rehab the city's water treatment plant. He told council members equipment and materials have been ordered, the new chemical building foundation is being evacuated, and Plant 2 is being prepared because it will be used throughout the entire construction project. An old 2,000-gallon diesel tank has been removed, and several unused, unnecessary water lines have also been removed. The project is on schedule, he said. In addition, the council agreed to amend a city ordinance so law enforcement officers can issue citations to parents who facilitate underage drinking by renting party buses, limos, and recreational vehicles. Hoven told the audience the police department noticed this was an issue this year during local proms. A second reading of the amendment will be read during the next week's regular council meeting, so it will be in force prior to graduation. The council also heard about a project to install a traffic signal at Fadre and Peabar Ranch Roads for $139,000 and a proposal to extend a maintenance contract with Motorola for $303,000.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.